You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
Okay, welcome guys to another episode of The Soul Chronicles, where we explore our journey working in the sneaker, sports, and entertainment industries. I'm Mohammeda El-Muhajir, along with my co-host.
Hi, everybody. It's Nikita Newell Hall.
And today we have a really, we're excited to have a guest today on our show. Nikita and I were just talking, we were reading her bio. We were like, is this us? She has like the same history that we have. So I'm excited to dive into this. So Nikita, why don't you introduce our guest?
Yes. So today I have the distinct pleasure of welcoming our guest, Zahara Khaldoun Diarra. She is a powerhouse. You know, I look at all of our names, Nikita, Mohammeda, Zahara. I mean, we are the triple threat of super cool kick butt names, first of all. So let's put that out there. But secondly, you know, I was really impressed with her background. I mean, she grew up in New York, spent a lot of time in Bermuda as she was growing up. She has a master's degree in cultural analysis. Hello, from the University of Amsterdam. What?
Woo.
And she graduated from Barnard College, Columbia University, with a BA in economics. I mean, so first of all, let's just get the academia down, right? Secondly, she has touched so many parts of the sneaker business, Hollywood, and corporate America, which is what our podcast is all about, that again, I just could not wait to invite her to our show. So as we go on, you'll hear about her work at Converse. You'll hear about all the things she did with celebrities like Erykah Badu and Jay-Z and Snoop Dogg. And then we'll learn a little bit about what she's doing right now at UNICEF. So ladies and gentlemen, people of the world, please help us welcome Zahara Khaldoun Diarra to our show.
Thanks so much, Nikita. Thanks so much, Nikita and Mohammeda, for inviting me on. It is an honor to be here. And I'm so glad you guys are doing this podcast, you know, telling these stories about, you know, sneaker culture, sneaker industry, and, you know, all the people that played, you know, really big roles in sort of building this sort of multi-billion dollar global industry to what it is today. So I'm really excited to be on and talk a little bit about, you know, the good old days and, you know, you know, great to be in this company with you ladies who are certainly legends in the space.
Wow. So Zahara, I want to just find out, let's take it back to the beginning. I mean, you have this master's degree in cultural analysis. I mean, you're out. Like, how did you get into the game? Like, you know, how did you get in?
Well, the master's degree came later. Came when I was ready to get out of the game. To take some of that. Yeah, so I went to school in New York at Barnard, which is the all women's college affiliated with Columbia University. And there I worked at the radio station. And so that's where I really got sort of into music. You know, I was always sort of like a sneakerhead and loved hip hop. As the music director, I really wanted to, at WBAR, Barnard's radio station, I was always like, working to sort of elevate all this great underground, like hip hop artists that was going on in the 90s in New York. And so like putting them on my playlist and like reporting that to like CMJ and College Music Journal, really trying to elevate all that was going on in sort of an underground New York scene at the time in the 90s. And so then I went on to work in the music industry after I graduated from college. And so I worked in the music industry for several years, became a hip hop publicist. And so was working with, you know, my heroes at the time, folks like De La Soul, and then like my friends, like The Roots, who were just coming up and on the road like 300 days a year. I was their tour publicist at Geffen. And so that was my first full-time job. I had like started, actually my first job was for Tokens at Loud Records, where I was an intern. And then like my first full-time job with benefits was as a junior publicist at Geffen Records, where I worked with The Roots as their tour publicist, but GZA as well, Killer Priest. And then even some rock acts that were on the label as well. Mm-hmm. Dance music, electronic music, and some of the like Rufus Wainwright and the alternative artists that were going on there. And there actually met like my intern at Geffen, mm-hmm. went on to manage the Strokes, which became an important relationship when I went on to work at Converse. So everything was kind of related.
Yes.
So I worked in the music industry for like several years. Mm-hmm. At Geffen, at Tommy Boy, where I work with De La Soul and a slew of other artists, Everlast, number of artists there. And then my last gig was as media relations director at Island Def Jam Music Group, where I was the publicist for all of the rap acts on Island Def Jam. And that included Rockefeller, that was distributed by Def Jam at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was Jay-Z's publicist, I was DMX's publicist, I was Ja Rule's publicist, Redman and Method Man's publicist, all at the same time, all competing for the same covers. It was lots and lots of fun.
Oh, my God. So wait, Mohammeda, I have to draw a couple of threads parallels here. Because yes. I know we're going to be doing this the whole podcast, right? Yes. But number one, so I started out at Grambling in radio.
Yes. Like
it was my very first thing at KGRM.
College Radio.
Yep, yes. It was a 50,000-watt station that was touching on three or four different states.
Wow.
And again, we did all the college radio conferences and Jack the Rapper and all that. So, hey, we got that in common. Then Loud Records, I mean, we worked so closely with Steve Rifkin, you know, when we were at Nike. I mean, we were on the phone with him and his team all the time. And then Tommy Boy, you know, part of this podcast is we hope to encourage people of color, Black people in particular, who want to get into this space, but definitely women. And I had such a hard time finding women mentors when I was looking to get into the music industry. Mm-hmm. But there was one woman who made space for me and who took me under her wings. And she was at Tommy Boy and her name was Charm Warren. And I totally looked up to her and she was my mentor. So we have that in common. And then can we just stop and tell the people what it means to be working at Loud Records as an intern for Tokens? What does that mean?
Oh, Tokens, for people who don't know, was the way you get on the train. So now we have Metro cards.
Right.
Back then you had Tokens, which were worth about $1.25. I had graduated from Columbia. I had this, you know, $100,000 education.
Right.
But like,
and you were working for Tokens.
But I was working for Tokens.
But like,
that was what they didn't even give me. They didn't give me lunch money. I didn't get lunch money.
Wow.
I got Tokens to come into the office. But you know, back then we loved the music so much. Luckily, I had a family that was very supportive. My father lived in the city, and so I got to stay with him. We're back in with him. He was looking at me like, you sure you know what you're doing getting to this music stuff? But was very supportive and, you know, gave me some great advice. Cause like life is really long and you're going to do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's like, this is what you want to do. Try it out. And so I tried it out and it was incredible. Like, you know, really important time in my life working in the music industry with such creative people. You know, I had some great mentors, like, you know, Amy Morris at Geffen was my first boss. And then, you know, worked with some great people like Jana Fleischman over at Def Jam and just really made some wonderful, had some wonderful relationships with people, and then got to work with really incredible artists and help them grow. Like, you know, was Ludacris's publicist for his first record and got him his first article in Atlanta Journal Constitution. So that first time that artist like sees his name in his local paper, you know, like that sort of thing was just incredible. And then get Jay-Z his first appearance on Saturday Night Live. It was his fourth record, but he had never been on Saturday Night Live before. So working to really push those boundaries for Black music, urban music, hip hop that weren't necessarily open or welcoming, you know, even in the 90s. And so, and to really sort of then be a part of the crew of people that really push the boundary and push the music and culture forward was really incredible.
Wow.
So how did you get Jay-Z on Saturday Night Live? What did you tell Lorne Michaels' group and team to?
So it was like, It was like a 3-month like campaign, like, you know, sending him the record, telling him everything Jay was doing, sending him every other press clip I got him. Like, I get him in Rolling Stone, random notes with a group of like white kids, you know, wanting his autograph while we're shooting a video in Malibu, you know, trying to really just tell that story of how we were breaking through, telling him about the record sales, the radio play, the pop radio play, just really trying to build and tell that story of how his career had really pushed through to the mainstream. And, you know, he just wasn't purely urban artists anymore, and that there was this appeal, this desire, this demand for him in the mainstream. So really just pushing that narrative just constantly, every time there was a news clip, sending it over to his office, to make the case. And eventually he booked us. It was in December, and Lucy Liu was the host. Charlie's Angels had just come out.
Wow.
I love that, because see, these are the things that people just don't hear. They don't understand the strategy that goes into making some of these big moments happen. Not just the strategy, but also the tenacity, right? Because in our business, we hear no, but we don't hear no. Like, if you say no to us, it's just like you said,
Not now.
You know, I'll be right back. Just give me a second, right? We don't really hear no. But it just appears that these music artists overnight became household names. But there were people behind the scenes actually advocating for them and weaving their story into a very sellable and realistic concept that these key decision makers could buy into. And that takes a lot of thought and a lot of strategy, I want to say. I don't want that to get lost. So thank you so much for sharing that with our audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was incredible to be a part of that. And obviously, it was a lot of young, bright people who were behind the scenes to make that happen. And so, like, I'm really excited to have played a part in that, his first New Yorker story. They called it the rise of corporate rap, which was, a little not the most flattering, but at the same time, it really contextualized Jay for the first time in this elite publication as a businessman. This is before he rapped of himself, "I'm not a businessman, I'm a businessman." This is before then, and so like really putting him in those, contextualizing him in these really elite spaces so that he could be seen and to be able to do those deals that eventually he was able to do and really grow to the powerhouse that he was.
Wow. Wow. So I want to know more about your days at Converse, sort of how you ended up there and what your role was there and maybe what was some of the highlights of your career there.
Yeah. So in 2001, I left the music industry. I was a little bit burnt out, I think, from the job at Def Jam in particular.
I think that's an understatement. A little bit burnt out.
I can tell the truth.
We're among friends here, Zahara. Just tell us the truth.
I was working all those acts simultaneously. You know, back then, everybody wanted to cover The Source. Everybody wanted to cover a Vibe. You know, it was all print, hardly any digital media. So those magazines came out once a month. Right. How am I going to get all three of my artists that have records coming out in October on that October cover? They all want it. So it was a challenge. It was exciting, but it was also busy. Like then working all those albums at the same time, flying cross country, And when I quit, I had been on a trip to LA that was supposed to be 3 days and it turned into 3 weeks. And so I was basically living at the W Hotel. And so, Okay, so I left the music industry and took some time off to sort of really like really assess what I wanted to do. And my doctor even was like, I don't know what it is you're doing, but you need to stop it. You know, like it was because my health, I was having really bad health situation. And so while I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, I, you know, people started calling me, asked me, oh, can you work my project? Can you work my project? And so I wanted to step away from music. And so one of the first phone calls I got was from Converse Sneakers. And Converse had been just brought out of bankruptcy. And my friend Tish Johnson Cook.
Hey, Tish.
Has started working with Cheryl McCants over there. Cheryl McCants. I don't know if you remember
Cheryl
her.
We know Cheryl McCants. We know Cheryl.
Cheryl had been at Brand Jordan and, you know, a lot of corporate brands. And she was the director of global marketing for Converse, which had just been brought out of bankruptcy by a couple of venture capitalists. And so they had a very small team and they were trying to like revive this brand that, you know, iconic, the Chuck Taylor, but like at that moment it was bankrupt. And this was in 2001. And it was 9/11 had just happened. It was like the sort of ground zero for a lot of things that moment. And so like, I'd say like a week after 9/11, I got the call. And I think Cheryl had been trying to hire you, Muhammada.
Really?
Because you were the woman. You were the, like, or she wanted a Muhammada. She wanted. You didn't get a call?
I think so.
She wanted a call, yeah.
Oh, my God.
She had just started. And she wanted somebody that had entertainment connections that could really help increase brand relevancy for Converse, like in the early 2000s. And so like, as it was being built back up as a brand, understanding that entertainment and music influencers were really powerful ways to do that. And
wait,
so
she's
looking at all that.
Zuhaira, quickly, how long of a break did you take from leaving Island Def Jam to getting this call? Was it a couple weeks?
So May I left, I gave my notice in February and I stayed until May for them because I was just nice, but it was nice. And I stayed until May. And then my brother had broken his leg in Bermuda and I went to Bermuda for the summer and I helped him, nursed him back to health. He had gotten broken his leg playing soccer. And I helped him. I was like his home nurse. And I came back to New York in August and probably, and then like 9/11 happened and like, I was temping at a music agency or something. And like, and then I got the call from them and a couple other people about, I was like, okay, maybe it's time for me to start a business. And so, yeah. So from May, I took off probably from May until August.
Okay.
So basically the summer.
Okay.
And so, And so, yes, Cheryl wanted a Muhammada because you were the go-to girl for doing this. You had all the connections with the artists and the sneaker companies and you were kicking butt at Nike. And so I had not been working for a sneaker company, but obviously had been working in the music industry for several years, had that background and then, but wanted to do something different. And so this was like the perfect opportunity to sort of try something different and also leverage my relationships. And so I went on board, like, I think as a consultant first to, and then to do, you know, brand, I didn't think I had a title, entertainment marketing, I guess, and PR. And because I had the PR background. And so I helped develop the PR strategy and lookbooks. Like it was a very small team. So a lot of people do a lot of things, but then also seeding product and to artists, to film, to stylists, utilizing all of my relationships. And so a year later, they hired me full time. I shut down my company because it was just, I couldn't
manage both.
I couldn't do both. And I was really enjoying the work with Converse. While I was working with Converse, I also, one of my clients was Bobbito Garcia, who did the sneaker book, Where You Get Those New York City Sneaker Culture from 1960 to 1987.
Yeah,
and so I was working on that. So it was like,
I want to hear
it was
more
like sneakers.
yeah. Let's hear about, I mean,
yeah, Bobbito, so Bobbito,
president of the Sneakerhead Collection, I mean, community.
So Bob and I knew Bob from when I was at Columbia because I was music director of WBAR, Barnard's radio station, but I was interning for him at Stretch, a kind of unofficial intern for him and Stretch Armstrong on their hip hop radio show on WKCR, Columbia's radio station. And then Bob asked me to co-host a talk show around, actually Nike underwrote it, around Playground Ball. Even though we were on college radio, we had to, because it was a talk show about Playground Ball, we had to buy a, called it the dump machine, where you like, if people cursed, you could beep them out. So Nike bought that for us so we could be FCC compliant. And so really I had an FCC license. And so, and I was a student at Columbia. And so, and I knew Bob. And so he invited me to co-host the show. And so, which was about like New York playground legends and all. And we interviewed different legends like Pee Wee Kirkland, but, you know, and different players and just talked about New York City basketball culture. And so I knew Bob very well. And then my roommate at the time was his publisher or editor at St. Martin's and signed him up to do the book. He might have introduced me to my roommate. This is, you know, it's all, you know, it was like, you know, a very small world back then. He might introduce my roommate who ended up being his editor for that book. And so when the book came out and I was already working, you know, with Converse at the time and had the PR connections. And so went to work with Bob on the book. And that was amazing because it was really the first book to really chronicle sort of the modern sneaker culture and the importance of it. And even like the culture of the collection culture and like all those people that were collecting and their stories about it was, he was the author of the book and the editor of it, but he collected a lot of different people like Ems and Dante Ross that like were big sneaker collectors and like had them talk about the sneakers in the book. And so it became a tome and we got press from everywhere from like GQ and Vogue to the Source and Vibes of the world and ESPN's of course, Bob, you know, and amazing. He's the best client anybody could ever have because everybody loves him and he has so many connections and he's a very hard worker and so, and talented. So it was great to like, so like all this was happening at the same time. And then like things were just blowing up with Converse. I was utilizing my relationship. So like Ludacris, you know, was wearing the shoes in his video and Jay-Z, I gave him some. And then like next thing I know, him and Beyonce are photographed in, you know, St. Tropez, you know, with, you know, the Dr. Dre Pro Leathers on, you know? And so it was like seeding with those people. And then, as I said, my former intern from Geffen had just like started managing the Strokes who were like, you know, ruling the indie rock scene. And so I was able to utilize and because Converse was just this ubiquitous sneaker and the Chuck Taylor with everybody. So it was one, maintaining our base with the indie rock crowd and like making sure they knew we were still alive and they should, you know, and sort of seeding with that target audience, but then also really starting to grow. And of course, maintaining relationships with Snoop Dogg, who of course, like never stopped wearing Chucks, but then really growing that sort of really growing that like urban base that, you know, trying to get in and like dig in and make some inroads with that Air Force One wearer and seeing how we could, you know, really, you know, give Nike a run for its money. So we were like, it was the time of like the retro sneakers. And so we reissued like the weapons and, you know, Mike Parker was at Converse at the time and he was, but he had come from special collections at Nike. We had Rick Wilson, who I know you've had on the show already, was managing our basketball marketing and signing up people like Dwayne Wade when he was a rookie. And so then I would take like, so like I was doing the entertainment marketing stuff. So like on Memorial Day, I would bring Dwayne Wade to like the Sources Memorial Day basketball tournament in Miami, you know, and like have Dwayne Wade, you know, who was a rookie at the time, but you know, and it's because he and LeBron were rookies at the same time. I don't know if everybody remembers that. And so LeBron got all the sort of a lot of like that fame, but Rick was so smart and saw people like Dwayne Wade, and Kirk Heinrich and Chris Bosch were also of that class, and that were going to go on to become stars. And so he said they were our starting five. And so Rick identified a talent, and then I would work with them to, like, you know, infuse them in sort of like our brand marketing activities and the culture, like through like the Source Memorial Day Weekend Basketball Tournament. So it was like, it was really exciting. And so Mike was doing all the great colorways on the weapons and the pro leathers and special editions. And we just were really trying to get the shoe out there. And we started doing, like, you know, we were working with folks at the Fader and Cornerstone who were great, and like to, and getting at sort of like more pop lifestyle fashion targets. And so we were at Sundance, but we were also at the BET Awards. We were doing like fitting rooms with academics and, you know, some of the other urban clothing lines, because at that time people were dressing from the feet up. They buy the shoes, then they want the outfit to match the shoes, because it was really about the sneakers and all those great colorways that Mike was doing. And, you know, I mean, all the brands were doing it. And so we were just really trying to push that as much as possible, and then partner where it made sense with different media outlets and events. We did BET Awards. We did NBA All-Star Weekend. NBA All-Star, because it was our launch with Dr. J. That was cool to meet Julius Erving. and but yeah, so just so much going on. It was incredible. So like, I went on as a consultant, and then they hired me as brand infusion lead. And I continued on there for like 3 years until Nike bought us. And so, you know, I like to think, you know, we were on its tail. We were doing our thing, trying to make a, you know, make our little mark in the world. And, you know, especially, and I think, you know, a lot of props to Rick and what he was doing with the basketball stuff. We were really making inroads. And so Nike came, and they bought Converse from the venture capitalists and myself, because I had stock options. They were like, they had given us stock options in the company. So I stayed on for a while, but I really wasn't interested in working with Nike. And why?
Why? Any particular reason?
I'm not one for big corporations.
I was going to say, so it sounded like the Converse experience was like a startup. I mean, I know it's this big, like, global brand, but it sounded like you guys are operating like it was a startup.
It was total startup operation. You know, it was all hands on deck. I was like, you know, they opened... Like, I had my own office with Tish and I shared an office. We rented out an office space when we started our own businesses down in Soho. But when they brought me on, they opened up an office down in Soho for me. And so it was like, we had no store, no retail place, but like, I had like, they opened up a little like studio office down on Broadway and Prince, and where I could, you know, people could come through and pick up shoes, et cetera. But I was like working hand in hand with the sales team, who were really pushing, you know, to get the brand back out there on shelves. And it was really a scrappy operation. So like the people who were there at the time, you know, we were really close because of what we were able to do in such a short amount of time, really. It was great. Like, one of my favorite memories was for the grand opening of Foot Locker in Times Square, which was a huge deal, when Times Square was really popping. I guess it's always been popping, but it was really having its resurgence then, and MTV was across the street, and all the brands were bringing athletes to the to the grand opening, like for the week, and like each brand had a day at Foot Locker. And so my colleague Chad, who did retail marketing for Converse, was like, we need to bring somebody, you know, to make a really big splash. And and he was like, what do you think about Snoop? You think he would come? Because of course we didn't have the athletes then, you know, we had the starting five, but you know, they still weren't as well known. And I was like, that's a great idea. And so Snoop just happened to be coming out with his record that same month. And so work with him. He was like, okay, I'll do it for you guys. You have to get me a private jet. And so chartered a private jet for Snoop to come and open Foot Locker in Times Square on behalf of Converse, and did like signings of Chuck Taylors and everything. at the store the whole day, and then like went across the street to MTV and like did an interview for his record, and like did continue with his promo activities for the release of his record. And so it was great working with him and his team and his wife, and his family, sending kids shoes to him and his wife and the kids. I always would have loved to do a sneaker with him, and I know that's something he really wanted to do, but we just weren't at the point to do like any sort of celebrity shoe at that moment. It was a big invest. It would have been a big investment for the brand, as we were sort of digging ourselves or digging ourselves out of bankruptcy and really trying to reemerge. But I tried to support the artists as much as I could with things like that, as much as I could get the budget to do, to really use my budgets to support the artists, because I knew what they did for us. Like, so I wanted to make sure, besides, you know, a free pair of sneakers, that we were kind of adding value and supporting them as well.
Nikita, that sounds like every episode that... We say that literally in every episode, Zahara. And I don't know if you heard, we did an episode with on Snoop, and we talked about, we both worked with Global Brand Marketing, who was the global licensor, one of those, or Pony, and they actually did a shoe for Snoop. And one of them was a, you know, very similar to the Converse.
Yes, I remember that. Inspired. That came later, but yes. Yeah. We wanted to do, I would have loved to do something with him. But you know, it was also like, from a business perspective, he was already wearing them, you know? And so I was like a huge ambassador of them and singing about them in his songs. So that's why I wanted to support him as much as possible, but it was hard to make a business case to do a shoe when, you know, we had this sort of like really earned publicity through his endorsement. And so I'm glad he did the deal with Pony, you know, like get that check, you know, get as many checks as you can. You know, I wish I would have been able to give, well, I did give him check, but not for a shoe deal.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, listen, the customer, the consumer, they know where an artist brand loyalty is. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many artists had deals, bona fide contracts with other sneaker companies, but would still call us for Nike.
Oh, yeah. Right?
And so... there was no loss for you guys. I mean, you won either way. So that's so good. I would like to shift a little bit to give our audience some sort of idea of what you're doing right now over at UNICEF USA. It looks like you sort of segued your career from entertainment into the nonprofit sector. What influenced that decision?
For the past, I guess, almost 12 years, I've been working in nonprofits, marketing, still utilizing those marketing and communication skills that I learned and honed, you know, through my work with artists, calling up, you know, the San Diego Bee for the Roots and, you know, Lauren Michaels for Jay-Z, but doing it for mission-driven organizations. And so after Nike bought Converse, I say for a little while, but then took my little stock options and moved to Europe and went back to school. And so I went and did a master's. Initially, it was going to be a master's in international communications management, but I went and they were like teaching people how to write press releases. And I said, no, thank you. This would have been nice, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
And so I ended up doing a humanities master's in cultural analysis, where I was able to really look at how the music and hip hop music in specifically was able to move and shape and shift culture. And so that was really exciting to sort of take an academic look at the work that I had been using music to sell sneakers, you know, and so how is that possible? And so like my master's thesis is about sort of community creating ability of the music. And so I came back and I wanted to do more work. I wanted to go for the PhD actually, and the PhD, and do and wanted to work specifically on Palestinian MCs, where actually a lot of them were like mixed Palestinian and Israeli hip hop groups that were like coming together through hip hop to make music. So I wanted to do further study on that. And while I was here, I was like DJing at my friend's restaurant downtown, temping while I applied for PhD programs. Good old Cheryl McCants
from
Brand Jordan Converse had just got a job at Urban League. As the SVP of Marketing Communications, and she needed help with their conference, putting on their annual conference in, was it Florida? It was in Florida. It was in Orlando. Disney was a sponsor that year. And so I went on, I was like, okay, you know, I might as well just while I'm applying, you know, get this check. and go work at Urban League, took me back to my initial like academic training. I have a degree in economics, and I really focused on political economy in undergraduate. And and initially, before I got caught up in music, wanted to go into international economic development. And my parents, my mom's a banker, but like was the head of Bermuda's Economic Development Corporation. My father's one of the co-founders of Harlem Children's Zone. So my parents, I just, this sort of a legacy in my family of working for the people, right? And so the Urban League really sort of brought that legacy of them and you know, even my early on academic aspirations together. And so the recession hit, and I didn't get into the initial PhD program I wanted to go into, and Urban League offered me a job. And so I went on as marketing director, later became senior marketing director, and stayed at the Urban League for 8 years.
Wow.
And so that was incredible. And then that was surprisingly probably my most traditional marketing role to that point. Because before I had been doing PR and then like a lot of brand entertainment work with Converse. But, you know, at Urban League, I started doing more like media buying and planning and, you know, and really launching their social media platforms. And so really sort of more traditional marketing work and but still leveraging my relationships and my experience in the entertainment industry, supporting their like they do their historic civil rights organization, but they provide through their 95 affiliates across the country, free education, health, housing, and workforce development programs. And so it was really great to be a part of that organization. Obama became the president at the time. And so we, of course, were working very closely with his administration. So it was really great to be close and have a front seat to that work and support the country and specifically urban communities and Black communities we are emerging out of the recession and recovering from the recession. So like we had like economic development tours where we had job fairs and free housing counseling for people going into foreclosure. It was like all during that time. And so it was really rewarding work. But then we also had conferences that we had to plan every year in a different city with entertainment and got to reunite with people like D Nice and bring him to spin at National Urban League galas and events. And so it was a nice way to mix sort of my background, but really driving towards like supporting like community development work the National Urban League was doing. And after 8 years there, I was like, a little, you know, I was like, okay, this was supposed to be a consultancy turned into 8 years. But during that 8 years, I got married and had kids and then wanted to do something different. And so took a break. So I quit and I was going to take a break and go to Zanzibar, where I had a girlfriend from Holland who was half Dutch, half Zanzibari, who was there spending the winter there. And she's like, come hang out. And I was like, actually, it'd be cheaper to hang out there than rent my house in New York. I was continue paying my rent in New York. And so my husband agreed and we went to Zanzibar. It was supposed to be 4 months. We sublet our apartment and then went to Zanzibar to hang out, did some work at the Zanzibar International Film Festival. And then an opportunity came up there to extend our time. And we just were like, okay, let's do it. It ain't broke. Trump had just gotten elected. And we were like, you know, let's just do this. And we stayed for 2 years.
Wow, really?
Yeah. It was incredible.
You and the Zanzibar Connect. I'm trying to go as soon as the travel ease up a bit. So I need the Zanzibar.
Zanzibar is open, by the way. I don't know if that's good or bad. Zanzibar's open.
I know they're like, no tests needed, no nothing yet. So I might be able to hit there. And I heard it's like just beautiful and like, yeah.
Oh, it was incredible. It was incredible. And so I started working with the film festival, then started working with the local foundation there that was like building clinics and schools and textbooks. And so started working with them. But then I also started like party planning again. And so like I was doing parties at Park Hyatt Zanzibar and bringing in DJ MoMA. And, and so it was like, I love Africa and Muhammad. I'm so jealous that you're still there. But I really had a great time. And really, it was like I felt very balanced and was able to do all these things, related things I had done in my past, all at the same time. It was like I really felt connected to all parts of myself there. And like, you know, there's a lot to be done in Africa, you know, which means a lot of opportunity. But then like you're not going looking for somebody to do something for you, you got to do it. And it was great to be able to like hopefully contribute to life and culture on the island, but really enjoy it as well. And so, as mentioned, it was like a kind of a flip decision, like a quick decision to stay for 2 years, but we had to like come back to deal with some paperwork stuff, you know, with Trump being a president. My husband was just a green card holder and we were scared that he wouldn't be able to get back in the country. So he couldn't work there because he would have to give up his U.S. green card to work in Tanzania. And so we hadn't thought everything out. And so it was time to come back. We came back and I was able to get a job at UNICEF and continue sort of to feel connected to the global development work, but again, also draw on the background from the Urban League and marketing and entertainment marketing as well. You know, we do we work with a lot of influencers and global goodwill ambassadors, of course, but also like a lot of CSR or products like for chat that, you know, benefit UNICEF with some of our corporate partners. And so my work with Converse, my work in the entertainment industry, always instrumental and able to leverage that, you know, in all my future jobs, really. So I've been at Urban League, at UNICEF the past 3 years, heading up their campaigns, campaigns to support our global work here in the US. So like mainly aimed at increasing support for our global work here in the States. That's developing campaigns and media partnerships for everything from, refugees to water projects to education projects. And right now, a campaign to support our global rollout of the vaccine, as we'll be distributing the vaccine to the latest number. I'm just going to say over 100 low and middle income countries over the course of the next month. And so, it's really meaningful and I'm enjoying it. And that's where I am right now.
I think isn't it interesting? I think all of us can attest to this, how that whole entertainment experience, no matter what you end up doing, somehow it finds its way back into whatever job you're doing.
Oh my gosh. It just does not leave you. It's like once you enter into that world, and of course, have a level of success, right? Then it's kind of always a part of you. And I think that there's something kind of sweet about that. Because you do have to have a passion for entertainment to do the work to start with, because it is hard work. You are going to be sacrificing a lot for yourself. You know, you talked a little bit, Zahara, about your health, right? You're going to be sacrificing yourself. You're going to be sacrificing your family, sometimes your friends, because the work is really all encompassing. And so, yeah, when you leave that, you do sort of take it with you, Muhammad. So I love that you made that connection.
And definitely, like what you said earlier, Nikita, like, you know, we hear no all the time, and like, especially in the music industry. And like, I think that like that persistence and passion and resilience that we developed in the music industry from like hearing no, pushing boundaries, being innovative, needing to do things differently, always pushing the envelope are like so important to no matter what your job is and our skills that like you take with you forever.
Absolutely, 100% true. And then I come from the NBA, obviously, and entertainment. And Nike was a beast to work at. So you kind of did the right thing by sidestepping that. Love the brand, but they're going to get their money's worth out of you. Trust me. But the point is that you, you know, really have to have that clarity and knowing you'll never work that hard again. I don't care what UNICEF is throwing at you. I promise you, it's not harder than what Rockefeller threw at you. Like some impossible, get me on the top of the Empire State Building by 3 p.m. today. And I don't have a budget, right?
Like, exactly.
Nothing they could do, right?
So. My boss says this. She's like, Zahara, I always know who to come to when I need to get something done, you know? You know, it's like, you know, whatever it takes, that's like the attitude that, you know, we came up on, and then that's what we came up on, and that's how we do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
JDI, boo boo. So this has been an incredible conversation, Muhammad. Yes. I don't know if there is anything else that you wanted to ask Zahara since we have her here, but, you know, as for me, I am so, you know, my heart is just so happy to have this conversation with you and sort of revisit some of those days of old where, you know, there really weren't a lot of women in these conference rooms, you know, making some of these decisions. And oftentimes there weren't a lot of Black people at these levels. And so it really was up to us to not only represent for the hip hop culture, if you will, but it was also up to us to represent for the Black culture as well, for our mothers and our fathers and our grandmothers and, you know, our great grandparents who wouldn't have even been allowed to walk into some of these buildings that, you know, we were now, you know, spending the night in because we were working so hard. And so I do think that we were shouldering a lot and having you hear and hearing your story just sort of reiterates that for me. And I hope that some people listening to this will have some sort of renewed excitement about really going into places where, you know, you may not see yourself, but knowing that you belong there. I hope that there are people who maybe feel stuck in their current career choice, and they'll hear about all the work you did and all the places you traversed and feel like, wow, you know what? I can do something about this. You know, I can go from one really great career to another amazing great career. Because I think, you know, I see a lot of people stuck in some of these companies and brands because of the name, right? I finally get to Nike. That's my whole life, right? And they get sort of stuck there. And so I hope that people hear your story and feel like, dang, if I step out of here, I really might just step up into something so much more rewarding. And that just builds on the legacy that I want to leave behind. So just from my heart to yours, I definitely want to thank you for taking the time out today to share with us.
Thanks so much. Thank you for having me. This has been great. And thank you guys for doing this podcast and really sharing these stories. And hopefully people can take something, you know, positive from my journey and experience, and hopefully it can inspire others.
Wow. Thank you so much, Zuhaira. You know, as we say here at the Soul Chronicles, and just even when the reason why we started it, you know, you've been years away from the industry. And it's like, you can't just go around telling people, I used to work with Jay-Z back in the day. Like, you know, you just have to, you're like, we're walking around with like all these amazing stories just like in our heads that'll just maybe go away with us. But now I feel like we got to tell them because, like, you know, it's important. We got to record and, you know, tell these stories. So thank you so much. This is what the Soul Chronicles podcast is all about. Zuhaira, thank you so much for joining us. To our audience, stay tuned. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast with Zuhaira Khaldun Diarra. And stay tuned to another episode coming up soon about life and times in the sneakers, sports, entertainment industries, and corporate America. Thanks for tuning in to the Soul Chronicles, and we'll see you next time. And remember to follow us on all of our social media platforms at the Soul Chronicles.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.